Next case for argument is United States v. Allday. Ms. Connor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I have one of those ambiguous first names.
It happens all the time.
No.
May it please the Court, my name is Carrie Connor and I am here today on behalf of Mr. Allday. And the sole issue that we've raised before the Court is the procedure in which the District Court followed an imposing sentence in this case. And specifically, we've asked this court to remand for resentencing in light of Rita, Kimbrough, and Gall, because in this case, it is quite clear from the record and the analysis of the district court that the district court put a presumption in favor of the sentencing guideline sentence rather than adequately considering the proposed sentence of the defendant. And as I've been...
Aren't you taking that comment out of context?
I'm sorry, the comment, are you talking about the plea hearing comment, Your Honor? Your Honor, I don't believe that I am, because I believe that the plea hearing set the stage for what the court viewed as the standard to be applied. However, even if we set aside what was said at the plea hearing, and what was said at the plea hearing was, I am going to give you a guideline sentence unless I find that the guideline is unreasonable, and only then will I go up or down from the guideline. At sentencing, the court did very much what it said it would do. And that is that the court determined what the guideline is, which is not error. I'm not suggesting it is. That is the proper procedure to initially determine what the guideline is. But then what the court did is in response to...
The government quotes you. Was it you? Were you at the sentencing?
Yes, I was actually at the sentencing.
It quotes you as saying... that you weren't asking the court to pay no attention to the guidelines, but rather consider them as one of the factors. And the judge responded he was saying the same thing.
Doesn't that indicate that he
understood this, these guidelines are just advisory?
I don't believe, though, that when you look at the other things within the sentencing hearing that the court really did apply the guidelines as one factor. And I think the most important thing, jumping over he said, she said during the sentencing, that tells us that is the failure that the court had, and obviously Gall and Kimbrough were decided after the sentencing. But Gall and Kimbrough tell us that in order to impose a reasonable sentence, it has to be one, obviously, that's sufficient, but not greater than necessary to fulfill the goals of 3553A. It also tells us that that analysis is done in an examination of the party's request for sentencing. In this case, we requested a 60-month sentence. The court, even though it's quite clear in the sentencing record that as counsel, it was stated specifically to the judge, there is no justification for a 37-month increase from the 60 months we are requesting to a 97-month sentence as a sentence that is a 37-month increase in that request based on any of the factors.
I don't agree with that. Because what you're doing is, I think, you're saying that somehow the defendant's request affects the amount of explanation or what have you that the judge has to give. That's not right, because you could request a one-month sentence and then say, oh, my goodness, I wanted a one-month sentence. If the judge wants to give another 89 months, he's really got to explain, you know, what's wrong with my one-month proposal. I don't get that.
Well, I don't believe that I said that in quite those terms. What I have asked...
Well, that's what you just said, that when you... He had to justify, you know, adding 30 months to your recommendation.
Well, under Kimbrough and under Gall, the court specifically discusses the importance of applying a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary.
That's true, but that doesn't mean that the defendant's proposal can somehow truncate the district court's discretion.
Well, that may be true, but I do believe that if...
Just to say probation, right? I want probation.
Well, and I think that the court could then say probation does not meet the significant requirements of 3553A, but I believe this sentence does. In this case, the court completely ignored the request for sentence. And it was, in fact, supported by...
But he asked to look. He has to pay attention to your arguments. I don't think he has to pay any attention to your bottom line.
Well, I think that's problematic then, because we know that there could be a series of reasonable sentences for a variety of reasons depending on the court exercising its discretion. If the court is permitted to simply pick the guideline sentence and do so in terms of language of the mandate of Congress without any discussion of why 37 more months is a necessary sentence, Your Honor, then we are in fact allowing the court to in fact apply the guideline as a presumption.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Connor. Mr. Kohler?
May it please the Court, Josh Kohler on behalf of the Appellee United States. The District Court never presumed that the guidelines were reasonable in this case. The appellant is asking this Court to find that the District Court presumed the guidelines reasonable, but cannot point to a single instance of the Court either saying it was applying a presumption or telling the appellant that he had a presumption to overcome. The District Court considered the arguments of the defendant at sentencing. The District Court, without placing weight on the guidelines, found that those arguments did not merit the sentence the defendant was asking for. In fact, the District Court specifically considered the defendant's age, something that this Court well knows the guidelines do not permit consideration of. And the District Court didn't say, well, I have this presumption here, and you need to tell me why under 3553A age rebuts that presumption. No, he specifically looked at the defendant's age, and in fact, instead of saying that the defendant's age was a mitigating factor, the District Court judge felt that the defendant's age and the degree of trust that that advanced age would engender, in fact, in the context of this crime involving child pornography, made him more dangerous, not less dangerous. That wasn't based on a presumption that the guidelines were reasonable. That was based upon the District Court judge looking at this at 3553A and determining a reasonable sentence.
Are we just reducing this to sort of a semantic business? If the judge said, I presume something, that's bad, but if he doesn't use the word presume, he's all right. Is that what it's coming down to?
Your Honor, I don't feel that's the case here, but I think what happened here was the District Court very clearly weighed the 3553A factors, weighed 3553A factors that are not considered in the guidelines, specifically said, and I'll quote, that he was taking a look at 3553A and all the things he had to consider, then went on to weigh the arguments of the parties and imposed a sentence that he said he found fair and reasonable. I agree with Your Honor that semantics is playing a role here, but what I think, with the role that I think semantics is playing, is the appellant is essentially trying to say, well, since the sentence was within the guidelines and the District Court didn't mention anything about a presumption, he must have presumed that the guidelines were reasonable. And the record just doesn't bear that out. The District Court never mentioned that he was applying a presumption. To get to Your Honor's point, yes, the District Court did apply the guidelines to the case in the sense of the first thing that the District Court judge did was to do a guidelines calculation, and that's not only appropriate, it is mandated by cases such as the Loeffler decision.
You argue that our review should be only for plain error, and I've been wondering how Mr. Alday could argue that the District Court applied a presumption of reasonableness to the guidelines before the court had sentenced him. How do you do that?
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't think there is an answer to that because the District Court did not, and I may have misunderstood you there, in terms of how he could argue. He couldn't argue before the District Court sentenced him because, in fact, the District Court did not apply a presumption. If you're asking how could he have brought the argument up, the District Court very clearly laid out how it was considering the sentencing. It brought up, Rita was brought up, the sentencing procedures were discussed, the proper weight to place upon the guidelines were discussed, and the District Court and the defendant were in agreement.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't see why we should depart from the general rule that provides for de novo review on the issue of whether the district court followed the proper post-Booker procedures when he imposed the sentence, because Mr. Alde couldn't have explicitly raised his argument before he was sentenced.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that this may be a somewhat unique circumstance in that Rita was very fresh in everyone's mind because it was a new decision, and the defendant did have an opportunity to address the proper sentencing procedures. The proper sentencing procedures were brought up. Actually, the district court asked of the appellant at one point what weight it was supposed to place on the guidelines. The response was, quote, the appellant was, quote, not asking the court not to pay attention to the guidelines, close quote, but rather to consider them one of the factors. And the district court said that's exactly what it's doing.
I know, but he didn't know what his sentence was. How is he going to argue that the district court erred by placing undue weight on the guidelines before the district court had sentenced him?
Well, Your Honor, there I think, for one, the district court had rejected the defendant's arguments based upon his age and his other sentencing arguments. The district court judge had very specifically stated that he didn't find those compelling, and gave the parties a chance to comment on anything or make objections prior to his reading the final sentence, and no objection was made. I think that, in conjunction with the district court and the appellant essentially coming to agreement on the procedures that were being followed and the weight placed upon the guidelines, makes this a case of plain error.
How much attention should the district court pay to the requested sentence?
Your Honor, the district court has to weigh the arguments within the requested sentence, and I think it did. It took the 3553A framework. It considered the defendant's arguments. It addressed those arguments much more than cases such as U.S. v. Dean and U.S. v. George require the district court to do. It explained its reasons within the framework of 3553A for not accepting the defendant's requested sentence and the reasons for those sentences, and announced a sentence that it found fair and reasonable without any presumption that the guideline sentence was reasonable.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. And thank you to Ms. Connor and the defenders for taking the case. Our last case for argument, Dilarama.